भगवद गीता 4.29 अपाने जुहवती प्राणम प्राणे पानम तथा परे प्राणापान गति रुद्वा प्राणायाम परायणः अपरे नियताहारः प्राणान प्राणेषु जुहवती। सो अपाने जुहवती प्राणम अपाने, सो नाउ इन द within the concept of prana, there are different kinds of airs. So normally we can't arbitrarily or artificially transport or extrapolate or transplant one concept from one system of thought to another system of thought. So, for example, the prana is a concept within the analysis of the body that is given within the yogic school of thought. Within the modern scientific way of looking at the body, there is the concept of oxygen, which is vital for breathing and living. Now, the idea is that oxygen is taken in by the air, by the through the nose way, through the respiratory tract, and then through the process of passing through the lungs and the heart, the oxygenated blood is sent to throughout the body. So here this is a particular vision of how the body operates. There is another vision which is given where it is understood that the air is not just something which is drilled in and out just from the respiratory tract. That is definitely there, but beyond that, there are different kinds of airs, subtle airs, which subtle means not necessarily in terms of they are made of subtle matter, but rather they are not just something which we can perceive so easily with our gross senses. So, apane juhvati pranam prane panam tathapare. So, apane juhvati pranam. The idea is that apana is generally considered to be the outward going air. Apana is the word air that goes downward, means, and prana is the air that goes outwards. So, basically, we breathe through the nose. So, the air that goes downwards is the air that goes into the body. The air that goes upwards is the air that goes outwards through the nose. So, now, pranayama is one of the foundational limbs of the path of yoga. So, prane panam tathapare, prana panagati rudva. So, here there are basically three stages, and we'll not go much into the technicalities of things over here, because the focus here is not on the exposition of yoga itself. There is an assumption that there is knowledge of yoga, and Krishna is simply talking about how the vision of yajna can be made to pervade the conception of yoga. So we will focus on that principle rather than the specifics of the processes. So actually there are terms, technical terms like Puraka, Rechaka and Kumbhaka, and they all have their specific meanings. Srila Prabhupada in his purport talks about it. Patanjali Yoga Sutra also talks about these. Essentially, they involve regulating the bodily air in different ways. Krishna, we can follow Krishna's example over here and keep things simple. Krishna does not introduce that terminology over here. It's because his focus is something very clear. His focus is not to give a elaborate or even a systematic analysis of the process of yoga. His process is to show how the vision of yoga, vision of yajna, can pervade even the process of yoga. So the essential point which he is talking about here is, now in any sacrifice, there has to be some something where the some yagya kunda or some object where the sacrifice is offered, and there has to be something to be offered, and of course beyond that there is someone who has to offer. So somewhere to offer, something to offer, and someone to offer. Now in all these activities, the someone to offer is the seeker. It may be Arjuna or whoever it is. But seeker is the person to offer. And how is the offering made? It is made through the process of yoga. The process of yoga means that normally the yogic shastras will not talk about this in this particular way. That means they will not talk about the process of yoga in the mode of analysis in terms of juhuvati as it is used over here. They will talk about regulate the breath this way. So the kumbhaka, rechaka and puraka are terms which are used not in the sense of yogic terminology or yogic imagery. But Krishna is using that imagery over here because there is a particular context and there is a particular purpose in which this discussion is happening. That's why what he says over here, rather than simply saying that, okay, slow down the breathing, regulate the breathing, stop the breathing, he says, apane juhuvati pranam. So, offer the outgoing air inwards, offer the ingoing air outwards, and in this way stop the breathing. Now this may seem to be very difficult to imagine. First of all, what exactly do we mean by outgoing and ingoing air? We know that water, air goes in and air goes out, definitely. We take in oxygen, give out carbon dioxide. But the idea that there is some discrete outgoing air and there's some discrete incoming air, and both of them can be checked and then offered inwards, that is something which is a little difficult to understand. That conception of how the air is offered. So we should understand that the focus here is on the yagic imagery, that Krishna is utilizing the yagic imagery for his purposes of expounding the glory of yoga, of yajna, for expounding the, explaining the pervasion of yajna, pervasiveness of the principle of yajna. So, essentially, it is regulating the breath. This is a 6-line verse as contrasted with the normal 4 lines of the Gita. So, we will see that later on. There will be a verse, which will, 31st verse, which will actually be 2 lines itself. Now, Prabhupada brings these 6 lines together because they are one unit of thought. And rather than this sticking to strict poetic divisions, Prabhupada is focusing more on keeping thematic divisions of the verses. So, poetic divisions are based on length or number of lines, whereas thematic divisions are based on the content of what is spoken. So, the 6 lines stand together as one unit of thought, and we'll see the 31st verse, all those 2 lines, it also stands as one unit of thought. So, actually, the 29th verse itself, if we consider 4 lines, then it is talking about the process of pranayam and re-envisioning the process of pranayam as a sacrifice. And then in the next 2 lines, there is another sacrifice which is talked about. Apare niyataharaha. Apare, some other people, niyataharaha. They become regulated in their food, and by becoming regulated in their food, pranan praneshu juhati. They offer pranan. Praneshu, they offer the air, life air into the life air. So now here, Krishna is using the word prana can mean 2 different things. Prana can refer generically to the principle of life air, and within that, there are 5 different kinds of life airs. There's prana, apan, yan, saman, and udan. So,
when Krishna uses the word prana in the first four lines, then he is using the word prana as a subcategory among these five types of airs. And that's why he says, offer the outgoing air into the incoming air. But there prana refers to one subcategory within the five different kinds of life airs. Whereas the last two lines, prana refers to the specific category, the generic concept of life air. And at a very advanced stage of yoga, the person who is practicing pranayama can even stop the breathing almost nearly completely. And there have been some cases of yogis who all body symptoms had been stopped, but still they remained steady, they remained alive, and they came out of samadhi later. So of course the point of this verse is not to try to prove any miracles, authenticate the concept of miracles from empirical perspective is entirely different ball game. Here the point is that the principle of regulation of breath can also be re-envisioned as a form of sacrifice.
Others, niyataha, they take a regular diet. Pranan praneshu juhuvati, and they offer the life air into itself. Pranan praneshu juhuvati. So the idea is fasting, was talked about earlier, not in the specific but in the generic sense, is tapo yagya. So tapo yagya is not necessarily as fasting. There can be different kinds of austerities, surrounding oneself with fire, or sitting under the blazing sun, or standing in water. These are, or raising one hand and standing like that for a long, long time. These are all tapa. One specific kind of tapa is fasting. So apare, some other people, niyataharaha. So they regulate their diet. Now there are different kinds of and different levels of fasting. We at our level usually think that avoiding grains, anekadashi, is itself fasting. But in the Ramayana described that in Vishwamitra, in his earlier life as a king, went to meet Valmiki Rishi. So there were some sages who used to live only on breath. And there were some others who were less austere, who would live on water. And some others would live on fallen leaves. So those who live only on air, they basically take in air, give out air and take in air. That's how they sustain themselves. Now we may feel that it's impossible, but there have been documented cases of some saintly people who have lived for 60-70 years without taking any food. Now, no doubt they are exceptional, but the exception also demonstrates the rule to some extent. And rather the exception demonstrates not the rule, but the principle, underlying principle. So normally we need bodily sustenance, but if a person is getting a higher sustenance, then that person doesn't need bodily sustenance so much. The important point here is not again to prove something miraculous, but the important point is to recognize that the body can be seen as a receptacle, and the life air is offered into itself. So the receptacle through which air comes in, there is the nose. The air, outgoing air, is offered into the ingoing air, and in this way the person lives in a form of austerity. So niyataahara, so the most extreme austere people may just take only air, but others, they take some regulated food, and whenever otherwise they feel hungry, they satisfy themselves by offering the outgoing air into the ingoing air. Essentially, the principle of sacrifice can be applied, or yagya, to the act of fasting also. Thank you.